Thank you very much for the opportunity to share our research regarding physician attitudes towards the herpes zoster vaccine. We hope this talk will provide some insight into why there is a relatively low uptake of the vaccine at this point. I have no disclosures. A lot of this information has already been gone over, so I will not repeat it. I simply wanted to say, and I think Dr. Jackson got to this, that zoster is very difficult to treat, partly because we're supposed to treat within 72 hours, and partly because the medications that we use to treat zoster do have significant side effects in the population. And therefore, there was a huge impetus to develop a vaccine that might prevent this disease. As mentioned by Dr. Harpaz, this vaccine was primarily studied in the shingles prevention study, which showed that the vaccine could decrease the incidence of herpes zoster by 51% and the incidence of the most common complication of herpes zoster, postherpetic neuralgia, by 67%. The vaccine was initially licensed by the FDA in May of 2006, and then ACIP provided provisional recommendations for all immunocompetent adults 60 or older in October of that same year. These recommendations were published in MMWR in June of last year. I won't go over this slide in entirety. I simply want to make the point that this freezer storage issue is very important to our results. Once reconstituted, the vaccine should be used within 30 minutes. Hence, when providers are referring patients to a pharmacy to bring the vaccine back for administration, they might be compromising the potency of the drug. The National Immunization Survey adult in 2007 found low uptake at 1.9% of this vaccine, and we'd just like to highlight that this was shortly after the recommendations were made and prior to the MMWR publication. So the objectives of our study were to assess in a nationally representative sample of family medicine physicians and general internists regarding herpes zoster vaccine, current vaccination practices, barriers to vaccination, knowledge and practice regarding reimbursement for the vaccine, and characteristics associated with not stocking and administering the vaccine. This study was conducted in an existing Sentinel physician network, which was recruited from random samples of the American Academy of Family Physicians and the American College of Physicians. Quota sampling was performed to ensure the networks were similar to overall AAFP and ACP memberships. That quota sampling included information regarding region, practice location, and practice type. A previous study demonstrated this method produced comparable results to surveys conducted in random samples of physicians in the AMA master file with respect to physician demographics, practice characteristics, and attitudes regarding vaccine-related issues. The survey period was July to September of 2008, and just to highlight, this was 26 months post-licensure and 21 months post-provisional recommendations. Providers were surveyed by internet or mail based on their preference. The internet group received a pre-letter and up to 9 emails with links to the survey, and the mail group received a pre-letter and up to 3 surveys. Because we did not find significant differences between family medicine and general internal medicine, we largely present the results together. However, we did run separate multivariate models predicting not stocking and administering zoster vaccine for each specialty because there were differences. The overall response rate was 72%, as was for each specialty. Respondents were not significantly different from non-respondents with respect to region, practice location, and practice setting. This slide highlights the most commonly reported herpes zoster vaccine delivery methods. As you see in this slide, 51% of physicians said that they were stocking and administering the vaccine in their office. 39% reported sending patients to a pharmacy to purchase the vaccine and then bring it back to their office to be administered. This is this process called brown bagging. 33% refer patients to the pharmacy to purchase the vaccine and have it administered at the pharmacy. And fewer physicians reported referring patients to the public health department or other clinics to have the vaccine purchased and administered. 51% of physicians reported one delivery method, and 42% reported two or more delivery methods. 7% reported not giving the vaccine or referring patients to receive the herpes zoster vaccine elsewhere. This slide is a figure demonstrating the estimated number of patients to whom providers had administered the herpes zoster vaccine in the last year. As you see in this slide, 48% of providers had administered the vaccine to less than 10 patients. 41% had administered the vaccine to 10 to 49 patients, and very few, 11%, had administered the vaccine to greater than 50 patients in the past year. This slide compares the strength of recommendation for herpes zoster vaccine compared with other routinely recommended adult vaccines. As you can see, most providers strongly recommend the routinely recommended adult vaccines, pneumococcal vaccine, tetanus, and influenza, with numbers from 76 to 96%. However, only 41% are strongly recommending herpes zoster vaccine. However, if you combine those who somewhat recommend and strongly recommend, you get a number comparable to those who are strongly recommending the routine adult vaccines, suggesting that this is a shift in the strength of recommendation. This is a diagram, because we know that physician recommendation is very important to patients accepting a vaccine, we wanted to ask physicians the rate of decline of vaccine after provider recommendation. And I'll walk you through this. In the green portion of the pie, 52% of providers said that patients decline the vaccine less than a quarter of the time after it is recommended. In the yellow portion of this pie, 27% of providers said that patients decline the vaccine a quarter to half of the time after it is recommended. And 21%, most notably, of providers reported that patients are declining the vaccine greater than half of the time after it is recommended. This is consistent with the NIS adult survey regarding herpes zoster vaccine, where 20% of the unvaccinated respondents reported they would refuse the vaccine if it were recommended by their provider. The next few slides demonstrate the perceived barriers to delivery of the herpes zoster vaccine, and they are ranked from highest to lowest based on the percentage of reporting the barrier as a major barrier. As you see in this slide, the top three barriers were financial. Over half of providers felt cost concerns for patients and reimbursement problems for physicians were major barriers. This was followed by upfront costs for purchasing the vaccine for their practice, followed by the need to pick up the zoster vaccine at a pharmacy, the need to store the vaccine in a freezer, more pressing medical issues taking precedence, and difficulty in obtaining the vaccine. We wanted to list the barriers that were infrequently reported, and this is being infrequently reported as a major barrier. So less than 10% of providers reported these as major barriers because these were previously felt to be important barriers to herpes zoster vaccine. Provider-patient concerns about safety, provider-patient concerns about effectiveness, the low incidence of herpes zoster and postherpetic neuralgia, lack of serious sequelae of herpes zoster and post-herpetic neuralgia, provider patients feeling the vaccine is not important, provider discomfort with administering the vaccine that a patient has brought back from a pharmacy, and provider concern that he or she will inadvertently administer the vaccine to an immunocompromised patient. The next few slides go through an assessment of the knowledge of how herpes zoster vaccine is being reimbursed. We asked physicians, as of January 2008, through which part of Medicare is the vaccine being reimbursed? And only 45% of providers answered correctly that it is being reimbursed through Medicare Part D. Also notable is that 39% of providers were not sure or not knowledgeable about how the vaccine is being reimbursed. Similarly, we asked about how the administration of the vaccine is being reimbursed. Here, physicians answered correctly 13% of the time that the administration is being reimbursed through Medicare Part D. And again, a large portion of providers, 48%, either did not know or were not sure about how the administration for this vaccine is being reimbursed. We also asked providers about e-dispense that Dr. Hapaz had referred to earlier. E-dispense Vaccine Manager is a web portal through which physicians can electronically submit Medicare Part D claims for reimbursement for herpes zoster vaccine. Only 7% of respondents were aware of e-dispense, and only 1% reported being members. Because this is the first vaccine to be reimbursed through Medicare Part D, we were curious to evaluate how physicians are evaluating coverage for herpes zoster vaccine. 57% reported they are asking patients to check with their plans regarding coverage. And for those of you out there who are clinicians, this could be very difficult for some of our patients. Secondly, they're not evaluating coverage at all, but simply asking the patient to pay for the vaccine and having the patient pursue reimbursement. And this was reported by 33% of providers. 20% of providers said that they were having their office staff contact the patient's plan to identify coverage. And again, 20% were not assessing coverage, but rather assuming the vaccine will be reimbursed by the patient's plan. Lastly, 18% report administering the vaccine, and if the patient's plan does not cover it, they would bill the patient. Note that these responses were not mutually exclusive. This slide focuses particularly on major reimbursement barriers for herpes zoster vaccine when dealing with Medicare Part D or private insurance. 43% of providers felt the complexity of reimbursement through Medicare Part D was a major barrier. And this is compared to only 33% reporting the complexity of reimbursement was a major barrier for private insurance. And this was a statistically significant difference. Other major barriers for reimbursement were similar between the two insurance types and included the time and effort required to assess insurance coverage, lack of or inadequate reimbursement for purchasing the vaccine, and lack of or inadequate reimbursement for administering the vaccine. This slide is a summary slide of the two multivariate analyses we performed on each specialty. And what I would like to highlight here is that for both specialties, perceiving the upfront costs of the vaccine as a major barrier, or, how do I go back? For both specialties, perceiving the upfront costs as a major barrier or freezer storage as a major barrier were associated with not stocking and administering the vaccine. For family medicine, specifically, perceiving reimbursement as a major barrier was associated with not stocking and administering the vaccine. And for general internal medicine specifically, having fewer patients with private insurance and a rural location of your practice was associated with not stocking and administering the vaccine. We asked physicians their likelihood of providing the vaccine if it were covered under Medicare Part B instead of Medicare Part D. And 49% said they would be much more likely to provide the vaccine if it were covered under Medicare Part B, as in boy. 27% said they would be somewhat more likely to provide it. And 24% said this would not change their practice. The strengths of our study are that it is the first survey to assess physician perceptions of herpes zoster vaccine post-licensure, and it had a high response rate. Our limitations are that our respondents may have differed from non-respondents, and also possibly that Sentinel physicians may differ from physicians overall. However, in our previous experience, this has not been the case. The analytic associations that we found do not necessarily imply causality, and the survey results represent reported practice, and actual practice may be different. In summary, although roughly half of physicians report stocking and administering the vaccine, the number of patients to whom they administer is generally small. Multiple delivery methods are being used. There is concern that the high rate of brown bagging reported is jeopardizing the potency of the vaccine. And the reported strength of recommendation compared to other routine adult vaccines is low. Less than half of providers knew that herpes zoster vaccine is being reimbursed through Medicare Part D, and providers are turning to their patients to determine coverage. Often this information is on the internet, and sometimes the internet can be difficult to navigate for a population that is not used to using the internet. Providers are reporting the reimbursement process for Medicare Part D is more complicated than for private insurance. The most frequently reported barriers to vaccination were financial. And there was a significant association between perceiving the upfront cost as a major barrier and the need for freezer storage as a major barrier and not stocking and administering the vaccine. So in conclusion, barriers to optimal adoption of herpes zoster vaccine may include a lack of uniform support from physicians, lack of knowledge regarding reimbursement, a perception that the reimbursement process through Medicare Part D is complicated, and reliance on patients to determine coverage. Also, physician concerns regarding upfront costs and reimbursement problems and freezer storage appear to be barriers. So, approaches to optimizing herpes zoster vaccine delivery should include discouraging the practice of brown bagging. And given that we're finding a significant barrier with the freezer storage, perhaps promotion of a refrigerator-stable zoster vaccine, and this is available in Europe, and finding solutions to the financial and billing problems, which may include including herpes zoster vaccine coverage under Medicare Part B, promotion of provider use of e-dispense, and simplification of the reimbursement process under Medicare Part D, and increase reimbursement for this vaccine and administration. I thank you for your time, and I would like to acknowledge my collaborators.